What's up, fellas? It's Bush here. We have tons of tools to get you ready to smoke your buffoon league mates in our redraft rankings manifesto. Whether you're looking for our consensus tiered-based rankings, top 200s, and by position, fantasy football news blurbs to keep you informed and find this year's Puka Nacua, risk ratings so you know how risky the draft picks you're spending are, the truth series so you can see how their 2023 season went, or you can compare our rankings to Sleeper, to ESPN, to Underdog, to Yahoo, to NFL, whichever platform you're drafting on, we have you covered this year with our Redraft Rankings Manifesto. Right now, you can get our draft guide for free by signing up on Underdog Fantasy using just $10 and using code FSE. If you already have an Underdog account or you can't play where you live, you can also head to flockfantasy.com. Use the code FSE for a 7-day free trial, 30% off any of the packages, and all of that is linked in the description of all of our videos if you need the links for that. All right, let's roll the pod. The middle rounds of fantasy football drafts can be a source of a lot of upside, but only if you hit on these players. So today we are breaking down our must draft players by round. We did the early round players in the last video on Saturday. Today we're breaking down the middle round players, rounds five through round eight in fantasy football drafts. So Danny, let's get things kicked off here with round five. And if you guys can see this on the screen right now, we have our FSC rank, our consensus rankings from our draft guide, basically pointed up against multi-site round-by-round ADP of Sleeper, Underdog, Yahoo, ESPN, and NFL Fantasy. And you can kind of see where we rank them versus where those multi-site ADP ranks them. And of course, that is available in our draft guide link down below in the pinned comment. So Danny, you got Malik Nabers as your guy. I'll let you take it away with why he should absolutely not be going in round five of multi-site ADP.
Yeah, I think out of the top eight rounds, again, you guys would have saw the 1-4 video. Obviously, this video is the 5-8. This may be the most egregious pricing of any player. So we're looking at the difference. Obviously, the 52 overall ADP on multi-site when you combine, you know, Sleeper, ESPN, Underdog, and Yahoo. And when we're contextualizing that 52, it is being completely carried by the other three sites. Because point blank simple, if you look at the Underdog ADP, it's a lot more aligned with where we have him ranked. We have him ranked 28.5 via our consensus. Underdog ADP, he goes closer to the early to mid third of your drafts right now. And with Malik Nabers, anytime you can get him outside of the third round, even if he was the value of the fourth round, he's going in the fifth round. And that's just simply egregious considering the fact that when you look at Malik Nabers, he is just way too talented of a football player to be going in the fifth round of home leagues. I think it's really that simple. He is too talented to be in this range. He's legitimately one of the best wide receiver prospects we have ever seen. And the FSC model actually does agree with that, having him as the second best wide receiver prospect we have seen in the model's history. And that's comparing next to Ja'Marr Chase, next to CeeDee Lamb. And funny enough, he is second behind Marvin Harrison Jr., who was also in this class. So that is the type of prospect you're dealing with. That's the type of talent you're dealing with. Obviously goes in the top 10 of the NFL draft in a situation where what's stopping him from getting over 150 plus targets on that New York Giants team. Again, we'll talk about in a second that maybe the situational insulation of the Giants isn't quite there with some of the other best offenses. But at the end of the day, when you're getting that type of volume and this type of talent, you are pressing the draft button anytime they are in the 50 range, 52 overall ADP. That's absurd to me. There's a reason he goes nearly 30 picks higher. Again, the reason being is that he is an elite separator with elite yak ability that can high point the football down the field. He really brings the full array of how a top end wide receiver in the NFL is going to hit. And I understand on face level, you can make the case that the Giants situation, bad quarterback play last year, one of the worst offenses in the league, I get being pessimistic about. But as you actually pointed it out in a recent tweet, if it's anything closer to the 2022 New York Giants, Malik Nabers is set to be a league winner if he goes in the fifth round of your drafts. Those 2022 New York Giants, 16th points per game, 12th EPA per dropback, 16th in total yards. Obviously, Brian Daboll was the coach of the year that year, and they did not have much perimeter talent. Daniel Jones now coming off of that ACL tear. By all accounts, this offseason looks like he's ready to go. That fresh aura he's bringing this offseason, man, I don't know. The vibes are there for me. And at the end of the day, he would literally need Daniel Jones to be by far the worst quarterback in the NFL in a bottom five offense to not pay off in the round five ADP. I think you can make the case that where he's going an Underdog, where we have him ranked, there's a little bit more pessimism because you're investing such heavy draft capital. But in round five, once you're drafting him against, you know, some of these running backs like Kenneth Walker goes above him, Joe Mixon, why would you take any of those guys over Malik Nabers?
Yeah, Daniel Jones gets a lot of heat, and deservedly so. He's definitely not an elite NFL quarterback, probably not even above average NFL quarterback, but he led the NFL in adjusted completion percentage in 2022 with Brian Daboll at the helm. So it's a well-coached team. Malik Nabers is going to be used properly, in my opinion. Just in the preseason game alone, I watched him absolutely decimate every cornerback that he was going after. Every single practice, he's making plays against both the Giants secondary in practice, as well as team practices against the Lions last week. He was destroying everybody. So for me, Malik Nabers, like you said, he is just simply too talented to not pay off at this price tag. That is what it all comes down to. He is going to elevate the offense. I'm not saying it's going to be great without him. I'm saying it might be functional with him. That's basically where we're at with Malik Nabers. And speaking of good offenses, we have T. Higgins, wide receiver of the Cincinnati Bengals, next up in our must draft players in round 5. And spoiler alert, probably going to be a lot of wide receivers in this video, because that's what we like attacking in the mid rounds, as I discussed in yesterday's best draft strategy video. But he is a wide receiver in his prime. As I talked about in that video yesterday, when you get a guy with past wide receiver one production who is still in his prime, still under 28, 29 years old, those guys hit above returning ADP over 50% of the time. And T. Higgins has a lot of warts. I get it. He's been a guy that's been dealing with nagging injuries, but those are impossible to predict. T. Higgins has shown a solid ability to play through nagging injuries in 25 fully healthy games the last 2 years. And when he's been over 70% of the routes, he averaged 14.8 PPR points per game. The last time he was mostly healthy for a full season was back in 2021, when he was the wide receiver 12 in points per game at 15.7. He only played 14 games that year. So injuries are definitely a concern for this guy. But if he's healthy and we get a good, he runs hot on touchdowns, run hot on health, top 5 to 10 projectable offense, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, high pass volume. And yes, Ja'Marr Chase is going to take away a lot of attention and a lot of targets, but T. Higgins has plenty to go around for him when the quarterback is capable of throwing for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. We still haven't seen the full potential of T. Higgins yet. As crazy as that sounds, I still think there's another level he can get to. Burrow's healthy, at least by all accounts on the wrist injury. He's healthy. Again, nagging injuries we can't predict. And he wants his big money payday, right? T. Higgins on the franchise tag this year. He wants his big contract. I believe he will be heavily motivated to stay on the field, even if he is dealing with something here. So T. Higgins, to me, one of the best values in the mid fifth round when you're building out a wide receiver heavy build.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because when you actually isolate their splits together in 2022, again, like you said, in 2023, not really a good overlap for them being healthy together. But in 2022, in the games he played over 50% of the snaps, specifically nearly 17.9 PPR points per game, legitimately a wide receiver 1 points per game. And yet you're getting that at completely depressed cost because of the injury riddled 2023 campaign. So we still think T. Higgins is a stud NFL wide receiver. We still think this is a stud level offense, stud level insulated situation, where if the Bengals go out there this year and everybody's healthy, we're talking about Ja'Marr Chase, we're talking about T. Higgins, we're talking about Joe Burrow, we're talking about the offensive line, you know, Chase Brown, they are one of the 5 to 8 best offenses in the league, and Joe Burrow should be an MVP candidate. So getting the wide receiver 2 attributed to Joe Burrow in the round 5 area, again, he doesn't profile all that differently to, like, for example, Jalen Waddle or Devontae Smith, but because of the injury concerns, does go much later.
Yeah, absolutely. You could even make the argument that AJ Brown and Tyreek Hill are more dominant alphas than Ja'Marr Chase has been to this point in his career, at least in terms of commanding targets at this point. So yeah, I love T. Higgins. I think he is a risky proposition for sure, because he could still deal with nagging injuries, but I'm willing to take that risk at the price tag that you're getting it, because it's completely baked in. Yeah. He would be going in the third round otherwise. So let's talk about our honorable mention in round 5. And that's a tight end here with Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts is healthy. That's the big thing for me, why I like him this year. The Falcons offense is second worst in the NFL in pass rate since he's been a member of that team. So he's had bottom 5 quarterback play. He's had Arthur Smith using him weirdly and using him in all over the formations instead of just playing him at tight end. All of that changes with the new offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, coming in, with Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix coming in at quarterback, both quarterback upgrades to the guys that he's played with. When you're a talented player like Kyle Pitts is, and your coaching has gotten better, your quarterback play has gotten better, and you're healthy like he wasn't, you know, the last couple of years, being a guy who's been burned on Kyle Pitts before, I want to rank this guy way lower than I'm ranking him right now. But all these things are pointing to the gold mine is about to come. It's the gambling meme. When you're chipping away at it right before it's about to break big, you back away, you're going to get burned again if you're not in on Kyle Pitts this year. If you've been in on Kyle Pitts before, this is the best his outlook has ever looked.
Yeah, and by all accounts, this offseason, it does look like that Kyle Pitts is a lot healthier. Again, a very underrated report from last year is that knee injury, I think it was, I believe, what, the PCL sprain?
Yeah, really, and he had surgery on it in 2023's offseason as well.
it really hindered him throughout the season. And you could tell he didn't look that like that same athletic, you know, 4.4 speed, 6'6", 260-pound freak that he did in the years prior. And like you said, the additions to the offense, having Zach Robinson there, having Kirk Cousins, who has literally been on record to say that Kyle Pitts is really impressing him, liking the way he attacks the football, the amount of creativity they can use him with the offense, man. We're talking about a situation where Kirk Cousins, if he's healthy, should be one of the quarterbacks that reaches over 4,300 passing yards. Drake London, we know he's going to be able to do his thing. Bijan Robinson, we know he's going to be able to do his thing. But people are so willing to write off Kyle Pitts because of these last couple of years. This is almost, it almost feels scripted that this is going to be the year he has 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns, and he's a second round fantasy pick going into 2025.
Yeah, and if you want to go down narrative street, I mean, TJ Hawkinson's been a top three tight end the last 2 years, both of them with Kirk Cousins at quarterback. So he's definitely used this position in the past. Let's move into round six, where things get a little bit hairier. I think round five is definitely a better round overall. In round six, we have Christian Kirk, Kyler Murray, and Calvin Ridley listed as our main targets in this area. And again, you can see how we have them ranked versus home league ADP, and that's available in the draft guide. Calvin Ridley is the guy that I gravitate towards in this area of the draft, because I get people are sick of him because they're pretending that like 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns like he had last year was a complete train wreck. I get it. When you drafted him at like the 2-3 turn, it probably didn't feel like he paid off that ADP, but he did have 6 wide receiver one finishes on individual weeks last year, and he was just inconsistent for the Jags. But the Jags offense was inconsistent. Maybe it was them, maybe it was the way that they were deploying him. They kind of deployed him as like a go route sacrificial X wide receiver when he was playing. The fact that he was coming a year off of suspension and still finished like as a back end wide receiver 2, high end wide receiver 3, and now goes to an offense where he is clearly the number one. They paid him to be the number one. Wide receivers in the mid rounds who are the wide receiver one on their team, who have had wide receiver one seasons in years past, doesn't happen very often. We saw this last year with Mike Evans, where the quarterback play was suspect. The offense was a little bit up in the air, but we knew Mike Evans was a good player and we knew he was the clear one, number one of his team. Matt Harmon charted Calvin Ridley on reception perception, and he charted him green in 9 of 10 routes last year. So he's still the same good separator he's always been. This reminds me a lot of Mike Evans last year. DeAndre Hopkins is already banged up. He's 32 years old. We expect him to probably miss a game or two at the beginning of the year. And this Titans offense is going to run through the air. Contrary to how they've been in the past, Brian Callahan coming in had Jake Browning throwing at a top 5 rate last year. Everything we've heard, everything they've said is that Will Levis is going to air the ball out. They draft offensive linemen. They sign a wide receiver one like Calvin Ridley. The Titans usage in preseason week one looked a lot better for Ridley too. In the game that I watched, they were using him around the formation. They were using him on slants and drags and out routes, the types of things that Calvin Ridley does well. He doesn't run go routes well. Why do you think that Brian Thomas and Gabriel Davis were how the Jags replaced Calvin Ridley? Those guys do those things well. So with the Titans and Calvin Ridley, I think this will be a much better marriage than it was in Jacksonville. And in round six, I'm getting a nice discount on the season he had last year. And even if he's as good as he was last year, wide receiver 27, 28 points per game, that's like 7 or 8 spots higher than where he's going right now.
Yeah, like with Calvin Ridley, the archetype of wide receiver he is winning on suddenness, winning on route running, winning on separation, being able to, quite frankly, work at that second level portion of the field, like you said, not to be this sacrificial third level deep threat, like you said, Gabe Davis, you know, Brian Thomas Jr., where the Jags went to try to replace him. With Calvin Ridley, the other thing I noticed in that preseason game is that he had some juice after the catch. He made a couple plays over the middle of the field, you know, made a couple people miss. And that is not an element we've seen of Calvin Ridley's game in the last few years. Obviously, of course, missed the year with the gambling issue. Obviously, last year wasn't quite the same player. But if we're getting that type of yak wide receiver, we're getting obviously the separation ability he brings to the table, man. DeAndre Hopkins is missing any time. I like Tyler Boyd. I mentioned him as potentially, you know, being Jacoby Myers in a recent video that we did, but Tyler Boyd is not stopping Calvin Ridley from having a 25%+ target share on what could be one of the more surprising offenses in the NFL this year with the Tennessee Titans. Obviously, Brian Callahan coming in, a lot of that Cincinnati Bengals influence. Will Levis, we both believe, to potentially be a quarterback breakout candidate this year. I'm all in on Calvin Ridley at this cost. Again, it does feel a little bit concerning because we felt very confident about Calvin Ridley going into last year at that heightened ADP, but it almost feels like the inverse this year where people were burned about him last year and are kind of letting him fall too far.
Yeah, and Will Levis, for what it's worth, pushed the ball downfield over 6.5 times per game last year. Yeah. Trevor Lawrence was down at 4 attempts per game, despite having way better supporting weapons than what Will Levis was dealing with. And I think tendency wise, Will Levis is the type of quarterback that's going to push the ball downfield, going to get things going. So even if Calvin Ridley is hypothetically playing the exact same role he played in Jacksonville, I think it would work out better with a tendency guy like Will Levis, who, even though both of these quarterbacks have big arms, he's the type of dude that wants to push the ball downfield. And it seems like offensively, that's what Brian Callahan and the Titans want to do this year. And the pass attempts, like I said, should be a lot higher than they were in 2023 for the Titans. So moving into your guy, Danny, you got Kyler Murray, a quarterback, a guy that we would absolutely deviate away from drafting wide receivers to draft in this area of the board here.
Yeah, and the thing, the sentiment that you take away from the quarterback position holistically in home leagues is that they're typically pushed up the board compared to underdog drafts, even despite the fact that on underdog, obviously, you have correlations, you have more factors going in for why people should draft quarterbacks higher. But we see across the ADP that the quarterback position as a whole are basically players that are maybe a little bit too high compared to where we rank them. Kyler Murray is the exception. Kyler Murray is a guy that we have right aligned where home league ADP values him at. And that's why he's a value for me, because quite frankly, when I'm comparing the quarterback position from an opportunity cost standpoint, round by round, Kyler Murray is one of the best values you can get at that sixth round valuation. And the reason why is that in 2020 and 2021, prior to his injury-riddled stretch in 2022 and 2023, he averaged 24.4 and 22.2 PPR points per game, respectively. If you equated that across the season in 2023, would have ranked him as a top two option at the position, only behind Josh Allen. And in fact, his 2020 number actually would have been above Josh Allen's mark this year. So you're getting a potential league-winning, you know, top three overall caliber quarterback at this suppressed cost, a guy that's currently going, you know, quarterback six, quarterback seven off the board. And it just doesn't really make sense to me, because even in his down year the past couple of years, he was an 18.6 PPR point per game scorer in the 11 he played in 2022. He averaged 18.9 points per game last year, despite not having that same juice he had in years prior coming off that ACL injury. And quite frankly, running with a depleted weapons core outside of breakout tight end Trey McBride. Now we're entering 2024. He is expected to be fully healthy entering this year. And the biggest addition you could possibly make this offseason was adding 2024 fourth overall pick Marvin Harrison Jr. I mentioned earlier how Malik Nabers is the second best prospect we have seen in the FSC prospect model. Guess what? Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one prospect. It's really hard not to buy back on a guy that has produced elite level fantasy production that is only really falling at this point because of injury concerns. But Kyler just feels like a forgotten man in 2023 with that barren weapon group that he's had. Again, still put up 18.9 points per game. Obviously, of course, if you're drafting him in round six, you're expecting him to be over 20, 21 points per game. But the fact that his floor last year at 18.9 without weapon score and with the second lowest pass rate over expectation team last year with the Arizona Cardinals, a team that threw the ball 59% of the time and only ranked above the Falcons in terms of PROE. If you're looking back at where they ranked in 2022, they were actually a more positive game script type of team. 11th highest in pass rate over expectation in 2022 and had a 65% pass rate. So if you're getting back to that 2022 level production with a healthy Kyler Murray, with a stud wide receiver added to this team, as long as the Cardinals are throwing the ball at historically low rates like they were last year, Kyler Murray is set to pay off. Obviously, we know if he's healthy on the ground, he's able to produce, 600, 700 plus rushing yards, potentially, seven plus rushing touchdowns. And I do think we could potentially see his best season as a passer. He's been a guy who's historically been in the mid-20s range, 26 touchdowns, 12 interceptions in his past, but he's never thrown to a wide receiver, including an older DeAndre Hopkins, as purely talented as Marvin Harrison Jr. So I think you can see, a Kyler Murray bounce back, 4,000 passing yards, maybe 27, 28 passing touchdowns, and him being the sneaky quarterback one overall candidate. So if I'm looking at it, would I rather draft, in home league specifically, where you have to draft, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, and the top 30 overall picks of your draft, would I rather spend a pick on Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts at that cost, or would I rather wait to the sixth round, get a guy like Kyler Murray, who may quite frankly have the same level of upside?
Yeah, and I mean, the opportunity bundle of the running back wide receiver talent you're passing on at round three when you take Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen versus round six, where we're talking about I like Calvin Ridley, but Calvin Ridley versus Nico Collins, that's not a competition that Calvin Ridley is going to win. The other thing too, Kyler Murray had a season low in rush attempts per game last year coming off of the injury, and now 2 years removed from it, he probably is going to run a little bit more. And in addition to Marvin Harrison Jr., who, like you said, is pretty much the most talented receiver he's ever played with because he didn't get the Texans' DeAndre Hopkins, obviously, Trey McBride's a really good tight end. Michael Wilson's getting a lot of buzz as a guy who could step forward this year. There's weapons there, in addition to the offensive line being a little bit better too, because they invested in it last draft with Paris Johnson Jr. And the line looks like it's better. I mean, Jonathan Gannon's the coach there. They've used Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia is where he came from. They use Jalen Hurts a lot more as a runner. And Kyler Murray in 2020, in 2021, had career highs in rush attempts per game and rushing yards and rushing touchdowns and things of that nature. So the rushing, I think, is the part that gets me the most excited about Kyler, in addition to the better passing weapons.
Yeah, and on top of that, we saw when he was healthy in 2020, 2021, that he was a very big focal point in the red zone rushing game, and I can definitely see him returning back to that level. The last thing I will say, what it kind of feels like with Kyler Murray this year is like the mid-range quarterback one is the projection that you have. It almost feels like a free roll. Like if you guys play poker, you and your opponent have pocket aces and you have the ace of hearts, three hearts come down on the flop. So ideally, you can even out, you can make even value there if he's a mid-range quarterback one and no other hearts come down. But one other heart comes down and you win that hand on basically a free roll opportunity. That's kind of how I view Kyler Murray, in the sense that you're drafting him as a mid-range quarterback one, which I think is the, you know, median range of outcome for him. But like I said, there is the opportunity there where if that heart comes down, he could be the quarterback one, quarterback two in points per game.
Yeah, like his floor is pretty much quarterback 10 and you're drafting him like quarterback 7. So like you're in a pretty good spot there. He has a lot of opportunity to chase value there. And also too, like he has been an MVP candidate. He's been a lot better of a quarterback than he's shown in recent years. So let's pivot into Christian Kirk, who is our honorable mention for this area. Pretty easy explanation here. He's just a steady PPR option who's available in round 6. If you guys play in leagues where you can start 3 wide receiver, 2 flex, or 2 wide receiver, 2 flex, and it's full PPR, Christian Kirk in 10 healthy games last year averaged 14.88 points per game in PPR leagues. The Jags offense wasn't even right last year. They were inconsistent. Trevor Lawrence was banged up, and he was still a wide receiver two in terms of production. And going back to 2022 as well, he had a really good season that year where he had a lot of a red zone role. In 2022, he was top 5 among all wide receivers in red zone targets. Last year, he dropped to 69th. In red zone targets. So with Brian Thomas Jr., with Gabe Davis, neither of those guys have proven to be like real dominant target earners. And also too, you have Evan Ingram, who's a little bit older. Christian Kirk is just the steady, reliable dude. I think he is a guy who has wide receiver 20 on his upside case and wide receiver 30 on his downside case written all over him. And in deeper leagues, he makes a lot of sense. If you're in a shallow league where it's 2 wide receiver, 1 flex, half PPR, probably not the type of guy that you want to go after. But me and you both play in deeper leagues that are full PPR type of formats. And I think Christian Kirk makes a lot of sense in those type of leagues. So he's a quick honorable mention that if you have anything else to add to him, you can, but we could probably just move on to round 7.
Yeah, I won't spend too long on him. The one thing I will mention is that if you actually isolate the games last year that he played, you know, prior to the Jaguars collapse, I would say at the second half of the year, obviously Lawrence going through his own injury problems, Christian Kirk himself actually did get hurt in the second half of the year. If you just isolate the first 8 weeks of the season when we saw the Jaguars operating at full health, 13.9 PPR points per game, wide receiver 23, consistent option, 1.82 yards per route. And again, he's not the guy that's going to go out there and win you your leagues, but once you're in the round 6 area and you need consistent wide receiver 2 production and you're trying to backfill the position, Christian Kirk, you can do a lot worse then.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into round 7, where we got a lot more upside than Christian Kirk here, because he's a little bit of a sexless pick, to be honest. Let's talk about Rashee Rice, wide receiver of the Kansas City Chiefs. We got to talk about the legal stuff because it's changed recently. The civil trial is set for December 9th, 2024. And the reason I say civil trial is because the NFL doesn't care about civil suits. They don't. When civil trial dates get active, they don't actually factor them in whether or not they're going to suspend players. Drew Davenport, who is a actual lawyer, basically broke this down in a thread about, I don't know, a week and a half ago. And again, the fact that this was a week and a half ago and it's August 12th and we still haven't seen a suspension yet is bullish news for Rashee Rice. And he basically said on July 29th that his best guess is that they're trying to push for a settlement in the criminal case, which is where any suspension would actually come from for Rashee Rice. And he basically said the further this goes with no news, the more likely it is that he plays the full year and a suspension would likely take into account in 2025. Think of Alvin Kamara, his assault case. They had to wait for the criminal stuff to play out. The civil suit they didn't really care about, even though it happened during that season. The criminal charges are the ones that the NFL will act on. And Rashee Rice, before all this happened, was a 3rd-round pick in the big board on Underdog Fantasy. Obviously, they drafted Xavier Worthy and they signed Marquise Brown, so he probably wouldn't be a 3rd-round pick now if he was cleared of all charges. But at the very least, you're talking about a guy who's like a borderline wide receiver too. In that offense, where he had a great rookie season, great yards per out run, they used him on a lot of designed short routes like slants and curls and things of that nature. That's how Rashee Rice wins. And with Travis Kelce up there in age and the fact that this is a young ascending player, if he's on the field, man, he is going to really return his ADP where he's been going the last couple of months. When you could get him in the 70s and the 80s before, and now you're still getting him in like the seventh round, he's the type of dude that I'm definitely targeting as my fourth wide receiver in a two wide receiver, two flex. Grab him as your fourth wide receiver, like I did in yesterday's mock. Grab Calvin Ridley the next round and you're in totally good shape. Or grab, you know, some safer option in the next round, like Chris Godwin or Terry McLaurin, and you're in pretty good shape. He is an upside swing and he's the type of dude that could really pay off this ADP.
Yeah, and I will point to this as well. You didn't mention the health status of Marquise Brown. Marquise Brown currently dealing with a, I believe it's called a sternoclavicular. Again, I'm not a medical expert. If you guys are medical experts,
4 to 6 weeks is all below, is the takeaway.
That's our fantasy takeaway. Injury. Yeah, I believe it has to do with clavicle. Regardless, though, it's shoulder injury. You got taken to the hospital, and like you said, 4 to 6 week timeline. And again, Xavier Worthy, we like the prospect. We also have to take into consideration he is still a rookie wide receiver. Travis Kelce, we know, is going to be dominant. But at the end of the day, if the Chiefs project to be a top 3 to 5 offense, Rashee Rice, if he's not dealing with a legal situation with no Marquise Brown on the field, will be a pivotal part of that. So, again, he's a guy that could legitimately be, if Marquise Brown misses any time, a wide receiver one in fantasy, and he's going off the board legitimately in the round six area. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you look specifically, once he was playing a full route tree last year, I mean, he finished wide receiver 28 in points per game as a rookie. And from like week 12 onward, he got 24.7 points per game, 14.4, 18.2, 24.1, 11.7, 17.7, 27 points per game. Like, he was so good down the stretch last year. He was getting targets. He was scoring touchdowns. He's the type of dude that Patrick Mahomes was relying on in an offense where there wasn't a whole lot of guys. So year two for him, he has a chance to really take a step forward. So let's talk about Romo Dunze, who is a rookie wide receiver this year, but also a very, very good upside swing where he's gone.
Yeah, and I don't think we have to spend too much time going forward because a lot of these next cases are going to be relatively pretty simple. But throw him with Dunze. I mean, I mentioned the talent case for a guy like Malik Nabers. I think you can copy paste that as well. Obviously, again, don't get me wrong. He is landing it in a stud wide receiver trio. It's almost like the inverse situation of Malik Nabers, where when I was talking about with Malik Nabers, it's all the open potential targets on the team. I'll talk about the situation as a whole with Romo Dunze because, again, he is playing next to DJ Moore. He is playing next to Keenan Allen, but just saying he's going to be the third of that wide receiver trio, I think, is a discredit to the level of talent we're dealing with Romo Dunze. I think he is a special prospect, top 10 overall draft pick, ranked as a wide receiver one upside tier prospect in the FSC prospect model. And I actually posted as well my thoughts on him in our draft guide. But I had personally had a top 10 level grade on him, 90.0, graded as a top 10 talent. And I had him compared to a guy like Braylon Edwards, who, again, you can make the case, you know, the head case he was. But when he was on the field and he was fully healthy, he was a legitimate 1,300-yard wide receiver early in his NFL career. So with Romo Dunze, I mean, I get it. The target competition, like I said, is absolutely real. But when you're looking at the situation as a whole, he's extremely insulated based on the level of talent he is as a player, as well as the quality of quarterback play we can expect with Caleb Williams to be there. Again, there's a very real possibility, in fact, that people are discounting. He could very well work into two wide receiver sets. I mean, Keenan Allen is a slot wide receiver, apparently came in camp weighing 230 pounds. Doesn't really look like the same type of athlete like he did last year. Apparently a lot of reports out of Bears camp is that he actually looks slow. Actually, JT O'Sullivan pointed it out. If you guys watch him on YouTube, the QB school pointed out when he was breaking down Caleb Williams that Keenan Allen didn't have that same spry step in his legs. But with Romo Dunze, I mean, he's the type of talent profile I just simply want to bet on. And like we mentioned with Caleb Williams all offseason, if any rookie quarterback is going to have a CJ Stroud level ascension, bringing up the weapons along with him, it's going to be Caleb Williams, a prospect that we view in the same light of Andrew Luck, the same light of Trevor Lawrence. Caleb Williams has the opportunity to have the best rookie quarterback season we've ever seen. And I'm not fading a top 10 talent wide receiver because of other mouths in the room.
Yeah, and Odunze coming in with Caleb Williams is a big deal because Caleb Williams, like the difference between the JSN situation this year or last year and the Caleb Williams and Romo Odunze situation this year is that JSN walked into a wide receiver core where Geno already had chemistry with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. It was an old school coaching staff that kind of loves to give their veterans the benefit of the doubt. And JSN was a slot receiver and Romo Odunze projects as an outside wide receiver. So this is a big difference in my opinion. Plus Romo Odunze going to a situation where I think Keenan Allen's going to be washed this year. I know he wasn't last year. He was really good for fantasy, but he was pretty much the only act in town in Los Angeles. He just got all the targets over the middle of the field. And I don't think that's going to be the case with Caleb Williams. And spoiler alert, Caleb Williams looked really freaking good in the preseason.
Awesome.
I think he's going to walk right in and be an NFL above average quarterback. And maybe by the end of the year, we're already considering him a top 5 to 10 quarterback in the league. So for me, I want a guy that's been building chemistry with him through the entire rookie process, through the draft process, and then into rookie mini camps and all that kind of stuff. Odunze has a chance to really become his long-term number one. And we've literally gotten reports of people and beat reporters saying this is going to be a fierce connection in the long term.
For sure. Again, I still love DJ Moore. I still think he could be a stud wide receiver, but I definitely feel like those two wide receivers with Romo Odunze and DJ Moore particularly can't coexist. And as we kind of said, we're a little bit more pessimistic about the projection with Keenan Allen.
Yeah, he's 33 years old and he's dealt with injuries in the past. Just because he was great last year on a barren wide receiver core in Los Angeles, I don't think that's going to be the case this year. Maybe he contributes. Maybe he's a pest a little bit at the beginning of the season for Odunze, but you're getting a decent enough price discount that especially in shallow leagues, like if you guys play in two wide receiver, one flex PPR leagues where you only have to start 6 or 7 guys on any given week, like Odunze is the perfect upside swing in round 7 where you're getting him there. So honorable mention in this area of the draft is Jaden Reed, wide receiver of the Green Bay Packers. He averaged 17.5 PPR points per game down the stretch, weeks 10 onward last year. There was a handful of names that outscored him. He was like wide receiver 8 in points per game over that stretch. Jaden Reed could be off the field in two wide receiver sets. That's what people are worried about, right? You got a bunch of big outside wide receivers there. Wicks, Watson, and Dobbs, they all profile as outside wide receivers. But Jaden Reed is in a great offense. He gets design touches. He earns targets. He's a great route runner to the tune of a top wide receiver down the stretch in 2023. So his rookie season to me makes a lot of similarities to Amon-Ra St. Brown's, where in going into the 2022 fantasy drafts, people like to talk about, oh, Amon-Ra did that when TJ Hawkinson and DeAndre Swift were out of the lineup. We were making, you know, excuses for Amon-Ra's production, but the bottom line is he produced, and that's what Jaden Reed did as well. He was the biggest league winner in fantasy last year at the wide receiver position down the stretch. So I don't care that there's too many mouths to feed. I don't care about the slot projection and things of that nature. To me, I think the cream rises to the top here, and I think Jaden Reed ends up being the number one guy in terms of fantasy production, even if he's only running 70-80% of the routes because he's a slot receiver, quote unquote. He gets design touches on the ground. He gets red zone looks. He was earning targets on his routes. To me, he's just the best guy.
He's a guy earlier in the offseason I want to rank as a top 25 option, but I kind of, you know, reevaluated a little bit. It is a little bit concerning he's not working in the two wide receiver sets. I get that as a whole, but at the end of the day, what it keeps coming down to and why I can't lower him even, you know, past a top 33, top 34 wide receiver, which he's currently way cheaper on your home league ADP, is that he is a very talented wide receiver. He is my bet to be the most talented wide receiver in that wide receiver room on an offense that I think has an MVP caliber quarterback. I think Jordan Love has the opportunity to be your dark horse 2024 MVP. This offense projects to be a top 10 unit in the league. Obviously, Matt LaFleur gives it a big time steady floor. And you mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think the way I look at Jaden Reed is potentially being the Deebo Samuel of this offense. You know, like you said, design work out of the backfield, a lot of simple yak work that he's able to take across the first portion of the field. And he is such a good athlete. He is such a good yak player that even if he does have a low ADOT comparatively to the other wide receivers in this core, I feel fully comfortable in his ability to be able to make plays in the open field.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he has a chance to really return on his ADP this year. And I think when you get a breakout candidate going this far down the board, and it's because of like, we don't know how to project his volume, but we know he's a good player, that's usually a good buying opportunity at the wide receiver position because talent over everything at that position, especially when you got a good quarterback and a good offense that you're attached to. So let's finish this out with round 8. We can go through this a little bit more rapid fire. We have all rookies in this area of the draft. I have Xavier Worthy. You got Ladd McConkey. And then both of us agree that Brock Bowers is kind of undervalued. Yeah. Talking about Worthy first, he ranked as the wide receiver 4 in the FSC prospect model. So we talked about where neighbors ranked, talked about where Odunze ranked. Wide receiver 4 in the class, according to the model, was Xavier Worthy, drawing comparisons to his new teammate, Hollywood Brown, Jalen Waddle, Jordan Addison, and in fact, ranking ahead of all of those guys in terms of his overall prospect grade. He has Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid as his play caller. The NFL fucked up for letting this guy fall to Kansas City. Marquise Brown is already expected to miss the next 4 to 6 weeks. Worthy was already starting, by the way, in the first preseason game. And now with Hollywood out, he owns the intermediate and deep area of the field. Because as I talked about with Rashee Rice, he's more of your short intermediate target. Travis Kelce, the same thing. So the deep plays, the DeSean Jackson plays, the Tyreek Hill plays, they're going to go to Xavier Worthy. Even if you are an Xavier Worthy hater, you cannot deny that this was the absolute best landing spot he could have gone to. Getting to play with Patrick Mahomes in an offense where the play caller knows exactly how to use somebody like this because they've had Tyreek Hill and DeSean Jackson in years past. I believe this is the perfect fit meets, you know, perfect prospect for what they want to do. Think about Achan last year, perfect fit for what they wanted to do in Miami. Puka Nacua last year, perfect fit for what they wanted to do in Los Angeles. Jaden Reed, perfect fit for the Matt LaFleur offense. Rashee Rice, his own teammate, perfect fit for what, how they used him, because Rashee Rice wasn't good on deep area targets, so they didn't ask him to run deep area targets.
Yeah, no, at the end of the day, like you said, the team to player pairing is exactly what we could have wanted for Xavier Worthy. There's a guy who, you know, you can make the argument, oh, he gets pushed off the line because he's so frail, or, oh, he doesn't have the best hands. Guess what? When you're attached to Patrick Mahomes, a guy that can threaten the third level of the field, what Xavier Worthy does extremely well, as consistently as Mahomes can, all that doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, if you can find a player that fits their team like a glove, like Worthy does to the Chiefs offense, you draft them, especially when you're getting a dynamic, fastest player ever recorded at the combine, 4.22 level speed at this point in the draft. Round 8, sign me up.
Yeah, for a team that's going to throw 650 times Patrick Mahomes, I will take any receiver on this team. I don't care who it is. Like, I'll take Hollywood Brown, I'll take Rashee Rice, I'll take Xavier Worthy. All of them are good values at their cost, because one of them could emerge, especially if Kelsey deals with more injuries or whatever the case is. So Ladd McConkey, again, also speaking of a wide receiver who's a perfect fit for his offense, goes to the Los Angeles Chargers, and I think he is also one of my favorite receivers to draft in the round 7, round 8 range.
Yeah, and if we were to have done the matchmaker going into the NFL draft, Ladd McConkey to the Chargers would have been our match made in heaven, because you look at the situation. This is the absolute ideal situation for him to immediately earn targets, with very unproven target earners highlighting that wide receiver room. Obviously, the most proven at this point, you know, Josh Palmer, DJ Chark's getting some buzz. People will talk themselves into Quentin Johnson. The way I'm approaching this Chargers receiver core is I am drafting Ladd McConkey, and I am drafting a ton of him, because to be honest, I mean, Ladd McConkey, obviously people are going to point to the inconsistent prospect profile he had at Georgia. He did battle injuries in his time over at Georgia, but he profiled as your prototypical power slot wide receiver that wins on suddenness, that wins on elite route running. And a guy that I comp to Doug Baldwin, a guy that you comp to Golden Tate, a guy that we both felt extremely high on as an early round 2 type of projection in terms of talent. So with Ladd McConkey, again, the upside could quite literally be filling the void. I mean, we mentioned the name Keenan Allen earlier in this video. Well, who has Justin Herbert leaned on as his go-to wide receiver in the past few years? It has been Keenan Allen. The same Justin Herbert that in the first 3 years of his NFL career passed for 4,300 or more yards in each and every one of those seasons. In his second year was legitimately a 5,000-yard passer. Again, there is some pessimism, some concern. You know, Greg Roman coming over, Jim Harbaugh wants to run the football, but what about their running back room would indicate that this is going to be a Baltimore Ravens situation where they're bottom three in pass rate? Because quite frankly, if I'm trusting Justin Herbert to lead my offense, or if I'm trusting an Achilles list J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, who's never handled a full workload, or Kamani Vidal, who's apparently even rumored to be cut out of training camp, I am trusting Justin Herbert to be able to level this offense. Again, at the end of the day, what it boils down to for me with Ladd McConkey is I'm trusting a good player to earn targets on an offense with a top quarterback. It really feels similar to the case of 2022 Amon-Ra St. Brown. People wanted to make the argument, oh, Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's boring, he's not going to be, you know, Xavier Worthy stretching the field on the third level. But at the end of the day, if you can earn targets from a good quarterback, you will be fantasy viable. And the way I view Ladd McConkey is, again, you're taking in all the risk of the offensive pace, of the offensive overall volume. But I don't think an ADP in the round 8 area is really measuring the level of upside he has in this spot.
I think the easiest example to determine how much better this situation is than people give it credit for is if Malik Nabers was selected to this team, where would Malik Nabers be going in reference to where he's going currently? And I get Malik Nabers a better prospect than Ladd McConkey, but just to give you an idea of how good this situation actually is, we'd be like, oh my God, Malik Nabers is playing with Justin Herbert. That's all we would care about. So that's all we should care about for Ladd McConkey, assuming he hits as a prospect, which we think that he will.
What do you think the ADP discrepancy would be if Malik Nabers was a Charger and obviously Marv goes to the Cardinals between them? Because obviously Marv, we know, is going about...
They would go back to back. Malik Nabers would be an early second round underdog pick.
So like genuinely, Ladd McConkey only being in the 8th round is maybe people having a fun time thinking his name is Ladd McConkey. Like is that the casuals are just against that? Like,
Keenan Allen was wide receiver 3 in PPR points per game last year. 3 overall. Yeah. Behind CeeDee Lamb and Tyreek Hill. If Ladd McConkey can just be a steady slot receiver, he legitimately could have 145 targets this year.
like, what's stopping him in this wide receiver room? Again, I know it is lofty to project a wide receiver for this amount of volume, but just look at the surrounding talent and look at the profile that Ladd McConkey is. What's stopping him from having, I know this sounds crazy, a 25% target share in his rookie year?
No, I mean, Josh Palmer is a solid wide receiver 2-3 type. He's not going to earn more than like a 20% target share at absolute most. Quentin Johnston was playing with like the fours in the preseason game. Yeah. He sucks. We have no real tight end to speak of. We got Hayden Hurst and other guys. Austin Eckler's gone. That's a lot of short targets out the window as well. They're not going to throw to J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards nearly as much as Justin Herbert was throwing to Austin Eckler last year. So, yeah, man, this is such an easy click for me. And same goes for Brock Bowers, who is our honorable mention in this area. Elite tight end prospect, the best we've ever seen, pretty much. We saw Sam Laporta break the curse of the rookie tight end last year. And at the University of Georgia, to give you guys an idea of how good of a prospect this guy is, he played for a national championship winning roster and Alford, the aforementioned Ladd McConkey, yeah. George Pickens, and Adonai Mitchell, who were all day two wide receivers as a true freshman, 18-year-old. He Alford these guys and was the best player on a national championship winning team. And they then won the national championship again the next year as him, as the best player on the offense on a national championship winning team. The Raiders could be one of the worst offenses in the NFL. I will not deny that. I think they probably will be. This is true. And Michael Mayer is still a talented tight end as well, if you're worried about him. But however, Brock Bowers is a favorable and easy target for any quarterback to hit, whether it's Minshew, whether it's O'Connell, I don't care. He gets open, he will get hit. They showed it in the first preseason game. They used him on 11 of the possible 14 snaps that he could have played. He lined up at traditional tight end on 6 of them, outside wide receiver twice, in the slot once, and in the backfield twice. They're going to use him all over the field. So even if Michael Mayer plays 60% of the snaps on the year for the Raiders, they're going to use Brock Bowers primarily as the main tight end, as well as on design stuff if they go in 12 personnel. They also played a lot of 12 personnel in that first preseason game too. So there's a good chance they lead the NFL in that personnel grouping. So for me, Brock Bowers, round 8, round 9, if I missed out on Pitts, Kincaid, Andrews, Laporta, Kelsey, Kittle, all those type of elite tight ends, I think the next best shot at an elite tight end season is Brock Bowers.
Yeah, because he's currently going in the range. The range I value him at would be with, you know, Njoku, with Jake Ferguson. And like you said, probably has the highest comparable upside of that group, knowing he could be the second target on that offense and knowing the talent profile he has. But I feel like for the most part that a lot of your, you know, public boards are going to push him down simply because of the fact that he's a rookie, without acknowledging the fact that this may just be the damn best rookie tight end we've seen.
Yeah, no, legitimately. As great as Kyle Pitts was as a prospect, he wasn't nearly as pro-ready as Brock Bowers. Like, Brock Bowers has the ability to play in line as a blocker. He has the ability to do everything that you could possibly want him to do. And, like, for example, by platform, his ADP is all over the place, man. Like, you get him at 77 overall on Sleeper, for example. That's very high relative to where he's going on other platforms. Like, he's going at 105 on ESPN. He's like a 10th round pick on that platform. Yahoo, he goes at 115. NFL, 117. So Underdog and Sleeper are pushing his ADP a lot higher even than you'd have to take him on those other platforms. So definitely keep that in mind. And speaking of that, if you want our draft guide, the best way to determine what platform is best for what players is by using our draft guide. The FSC rankings versus home league ADP is just one of the features in there. You get all of our rankings. You get quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, tight ends, super flex, one quarterback, risk ratings, FSC versus home leagues, like I just talked about, fantasy football news blurbs, the truth series that Danny does. We have the point per game scoring from last year. We also have all the research notes, all the spreadsheets and stuff that I use for videos. There is a ton of value in our draft guide. And right now you can go down to the link in the description down below, get our draft guide for free with a $10 Underdog Fantasy sign up and the promo code FSE. When you sign up over there, within 24 hours, the draft guide will be emailed to you. If you already have an Underdog account, or if you can't play where you live, you can also get our draft guide on flockfantasy.com and use the promo code FSE over there for 7 days for free, 30% off any of the packages, and 6 months for free when you sign up annually. If you sign up annually right now on Flock Fantasy, you'll be covered from this offseason to next offseason. If you play Dynasty especially, that is extremely, extremely valuable because you'll get covered all the way through the season, all the way through the rookie draft process and that kind of thing. So definitely check out all that stuff if you're interested. If you enjoyed this video, leave a like down below, subscribe to the channel if you're new around here, and comment down below any of your thoughts. But with that being said, peace out, and we'll talk to you soon.